This program is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners. Show your support at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
This week on Meet in Three, we're embracing the spooky spirit of Halloween, from zombies to witches. We're exploring the odd, the occult, and the taboo in the world of food.
There are restaurants with no storefront, shrunken down into hundreds of square feet versus thousands of square feet. No servers, no hosts, nobody taking your order.
The rats in the sewers are now smelling, all of a sudden, fresh food molecules. And those rats were like, holy cow, follow that scent.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're recording remotely, and today is Tuesday, October 27th, 2020. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host of Beer Sessions on heritageradionetwork.org, and we're talking about what's new in New York City. We'll have guests from two breweries, 18th Ward and Bridge and Tunnel. So let's have the guests introduce themselves. Let's start with Rich.
Hey, how you doing, Jimmy? Yeah, it's Rich Castagna from Bridge and Tunnel Brewery.
Great, Rich. It's great to have you back on. And then Jordan?
Glad to be here. Jordan Beldner from 18th Ward Brewing.
Great. And Will?
Hey, how you doing, Jimmy? It's Will from 18th Ward Brewing, head brewer.
Great. I'm so glad to have you guys on. This time of year, usually we're thinking about things like fall releases and Oktoberfest, but we're also thinking about, you know, having people inside our breweries and tasting rooms and restaurants. So it's been quite a year, and I know you guys have a lot to talk about. So we're going to start with Jordan. Jordan, just tell us about the story of 18th Ward, how you opened. You guys have a very cool place, I know, and it's in Williamsburg. It's near Brooklyn Steel. So obviously, when you opened, you depended on a lot of in-person crowds. So just tell us, you know, what it was like opening and the big transitions you've had to make.
Well, you hit it. With the reason why we chose this location was because it was directly across the street from Brooklyn Steel. You know, in a given year, they play pretty full shows 10 months of the year. We opened last September 2019. It was great. We loved it. We were open for about 5 months before COVID happened. And, you know, we kind of had to pivot our business model. We were not planning on canning this fast after opening, but when COVID happened, we decided to can our beer, and that's pretty much it.
So originally it was a brew pub. You had a full menu and definitely had a party vibe, right?
Yeah. It's a nice looking space. It used to be a carpet factory. So we gutted and put a 3-barrel system in here. A lot of the shows, pre-shows and post-show, were pretty crazy here. We had a full kitchen menu as well. So it was a fun time while it lasted.
Yeah. And I've definitely noticed on Instagram you have a lot of cans now. This is the craziest time. And I don't even know how to ask you that, because I know you opened a place for people. How is this next stage going for you guys? Are you having any people inside yet, or is it still just pickup and delivery?
Well, you know, we since the area we're in, it's this industrial park, if you will, and it's not busy on weekends. So we have a 50-foot outdoor space, which has been great since we were allowed to have people back, you know, around. So it's when we came back, it was a little tough for us at the beginning because people didn't know who we were. And one thing that helped us was getting our cans out there, getting our beer, our labels, and it brought a significant amount of foot traffic to us on weekends, which has been great.
That's great. Now let's talk to Will. So Will, you're the head brewer at 18th Ward. Tell us a little bit about your background, because I know you've got a pretty good resume as a brewer.
So I started my brewing career at Single Cut, the five, six years ago at this point. When I first started, I was running keg deliveries part-time and then in the cellar the other 50% of the time. So kind of an entry-level start by most standards. But within a month or so of me being there, our brewer ended up moving to Maine with his wife. So I got thrust into brewing pretty quickly. And then from there, you know, a year later began running the operations over there. And then made the move over to Captain Lawrence for a little while to kind of get a little bit more hands-on in terms of the large-scale production. They were running a 50-barrel automated system. And it was definitely a good learning experience. I learned how to run a lot more intricate equipment, you know, things like a centrifuge and obviously the automated system. And so that was a lot of fun. And then went over to the Bronx Brewery to help with them scaling up at their location in the South Bronx. They had some contractors shift around. So the last 2 years I've been over there, you know, improving quality, improving processes, making the operation a little bit more efficient as best as I could, and then kind of brought me back sort of full circle to 18th Ward, where I get, you know, to run this 3-barrel system, where I kind of have a lot of the creative freedoms that I think, you know, every brewer really strives for at some point in their career. I've been gracious to Jordan and Mike for kind of trusting me with their brand and then, you know, creating their liquid.
Well, that's great. Now let's go to Rich at Bridge and Tunnel. Rich, I know how you started. We had you on the show many times, and I know you very well. You started with your little garage brewery. And in the course of expanding, you know, so you're kind of in the same boat as them, but you're a little, I think you're a step above in terms of, you know, your production and everything. What have you had to change since COVID started in terms of what beers you're making and particularly your beer lineup, if that's changed?
So, yeah, COVID hit and we had to pretty much do the same thing. We had to can pretty much as many styles as we could. And we didn't do a lot of canning prior to that. We have a distributor now and we would pretty much pass cans to them, cases according to what they wanted. And then our canning was like for in-house, you know, for people coming in buying 4-packs, but we never really became, I guess, known for the cans. And once COVID hit, within the first week, I knew that if we didn't make this, you know, make canning our thing and deliveries and pickup and pre-order and all that, if we didn't do that immediately, then we were going to sink in a month. So I ramped up, you know, my canning rig. And like, as like, give you an idea, like we used to buy a pallet of cans, you know, that's like, it's 5,000 cans on a pallet. And, we'd burn through that pallet in maybe 3-4 months. You know, we really weren't doing a lot. And once COVID hit, we were burning through, you know, those 5,000 cans in 3 weeks, which for us is a lot. Maybe for another brewery, it's not a lot, but for us, that was moving at a pretty quick pace. And then all the whole canning process ended up pretty much like there was a need for extra storage, which basically the tap room became consumed with this canning project. And, you know, the tap room was closed. So that was, you know, it allowed us to basically turn the entire brewery, you know, that shares the tap room to just turn it all into production. So we, you know, we came out of the gate strong, you know, like that. And it pretty much saved us. I mean, we were doing well for the first few months. And then when everybody started coming back outside, deliveries dropped off. And then, you know, by that time, then we were on to a new challenge. And the next challenge was outdoor seating. So we pushed everything outside. we're still doing the canning, but not as at the pace that we once were, you know, that we were doing during the shutdown. And we had turned the tap room into such a workspace that it's literally taken me probably about a month to clean it up. It's still not 100%. So we haven't opened the tap room yet because I've still been like not satisfied with, you know, the complete mess that we made, you know, during the shutdown. So, but yeah,
it's interesting. So many breweries like yours, you know, since 2014, so many breweries in New York have opened with the model of getting people into their space and paying retail price. How does it feel? I mean, you're actually like an old school brewery now. You're making cans and selling them.
Yeah. I mean, we had tried to, you know, be a brewery that, you know, that did canning. We had tried it, but you know how it is for us. I mean, it's like we don't have a big marketing budget. We're a smaller brewery, and it was really like a local following that we had. And then, I work another job, so I don't get a chance to go out and do collaborations with other breweries and all that stuff. I think adds to people not knowing Bridge and Tunnel as a brewery that, you know, has cans available and people, you know, seek out the cans. But that dynamic changed a bit during the shutdown, because we came out, like I turned it around within a week, and many of the beers that I never even had labels for, I put together labels, and within the first couple of weeks, we went from maybe having literally like maybe three can varieties at a time to blowing out to like, you know, 10, 11 different styles available in four packs. And then we were doing, we were doing deliveries. So we started putting out, ads on social media. And then we just started getting orders from, you know, going all through Manhattan, people that we were never able to penetrate, accounts that we weren't able to penetrate wholesale. Now people retail weren't able to, you know, buy from us, and there was nobody on the road because it was during the shutdown. So we were able to penetrate the market, you know, with the resources that we had. And now that everything has gravitated toward outdoor seating, and eventually now it's going to get, you know, getting colder again, we're going to come back inside, but people are still coming for, you know, takeaway of four packs because of that exposure during the shutdown. So it's like we did better. We made a gain, and we finally broke into, you know, being known as a brewery that has cans, you know, that has product in cans. And you know, we're trying to keep it going. I mean, and it was a really good learning experience. I mean, I had to rebuild my canning system. I can't say that we walked away feeling that we walked away hurt. Like we, you know, felt stronger after it, you know.
Chris, did you make your canning system from scratch in the beginning?
Yes.
Or did you you built it yourself? Of course you did.
I built it myself. But it required like some adjustments to make it so that we can go faster, you know? And you know, it was like really like there was you know, like they say, what do they say? Necessity is the something along that lines with invention. Something along those lines. Like it basically like,
because listeners, you can fill that one in.
So. Yeah. Basically like, because we had to do it, I had to come up with solutions, you know, and we had to do it very quickly. And it, the result is that we really dialed it in. And, you know, it was just one of those things that we kind of got better at.
That's great, Rich. So, Rich, hold on. We're going to come back to you. So, let's go to Jordan, just changing the subject a little bit. So, let's go back to opening a year ago, because, you know, things will get better. What were a couple of standout moments, you know, when you, You know, tell us about opening up in Williamsburg across from Brooklyn Steel. You know, how long did you look for that space? What were some of the original thoughts you had and some of the planning that, you went through?
Well, I guess to answer your first part of the question, opening night, we just opened the door, no fanfare. We knew there was a concert across the street, and we got crushed for the pregame. People that had, you know, typically lined up around the corner to get into Brooklyn Steel all of a sudden saw there was a neon sign that said brewery across the street, and they walked in. And so that was, you know, that night we were able to look at each other, my partner Mike and I, and just say, okay, this was the right decision. So, but to answer the second part, which was how long did it take? It took almost 2 years. It took a year and a half to finally get this place open. It just took a long time. Construction took a long time. The city, as we know, tends to drag its feet sometimes with getting the okays for certain things without throwing them completely under the bus. So that took a while. And you know, again, it's been challenging since COVID shut down Brooklyn Steel, and I don't know when they're coming back. I don't think anybody knows. And, you know, we lost, since we weren't canning and we didn't have that additional revenue stream, we lost, I want to say, 90% of our business when they shut the doors. So for us, again, it was, well, we're not going to close. So how do we figure this out? And again, we pivoted, we brought Will in, and I'm pretty happy with the way things have gone since we did that.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I mean, everything like that, large venues, I just follow what Broadway's doing. And Broadway, I remember when COVID started, they put out certain dates and it kept getting pushed back. And I think now they're talking about Broadway's not going to open till like June of next year.
Right. So everybody seems to think the people that you talk to that are associated with Brooklyn Steel and all these other venues seem to think that next fall is when hopefully they can reopen.
Wow, that's crazy. So originally, let's get Will on. So Will, when you came in, just tell us some of the first beers you're doing. Tell us what you had to do as a brewer in 18th Ward. And when did you come in?
I think it's been about 2 months now, right? Yeah, I came in the middle of August. So my first thing as a brewer is to make sure everything is spotless. So I kind of top down, clean the place. And, the first beers I put in the tank were, of course, a New England IPA and, a pale ale. Cause I think before me, we were producing a lot of, you know, kind of farmhouse styles and wild ales, Fuca Vikes, stuff like that. Not personally my palate, but you know, New England IPAs, pale ales, IPAs, those are the things that sell. And those are the things that we needed to start putting in cans. So we pushed out the Rooftop Rager, which is our first New England IPA, and our Passport Pale Ale, which is our first pale ale. And since then, we have a Berliner Weiss now. We have two different Pilsners. We have a Golden Ale. We have another IPA. So we're kind of... at this point, since we are a little small and we have the flexibility, especially with our mobile canner coming in and out, like we're really trying to get as many styles out there and really trying to see what people like and what people want. You know, when Brooklyn Steel was open, people just came and drank. And we're trying to make sure that people know that we're still here with these big IPAs. And you know, even this week I brewed I brewed my first ever pastry stout in 6 years.
Beignet pastry stout.
Oh, yeah, beignet pastry stout, New Orleans inspired. I listened to jazz music all day while I brewed it. Some Cafe du Monde coffee with chicory, of course, and so you know, all also having fun while doing it, but.
And well, let's talk about your beers first, because I noticed you're really featuring all the cans. The dandelion image, is that a golden ale?
That is.
So tell us about that recipe.
So that is based off of a traditional German golden, and it's actually it was just before my time. A previous brewer had it, but I've tweaked it a tiny bit since then. It has turned out to be one of my favorite beers that we've been putting out. But it's very, very lightly hopped, all German Euro hops, German ingredients, and just a super, super light, crushable golden with an emphasis on the floral aromatics and flavors.
Ian, I noticed, are you selling the cans to other restaurants and accounts too?
We've actually just, one of the best parts about this summer was we partnered with TapRM. I don't know if you've heard of them. They were, an online, they're a distribution company first and foremost, but they pivoted as well. And they became an online store, if you will, and they delivered all across New York State. We sold to them. They continuously bought all of our product that we brought in, which we were very thankful for. And then we actually just signed a couple of weeks ago a wholesale distribution deal with them. So, they were fantastic. And what was great about that site is that it was able to showcase our labels. And our labels, I don't know if you've seen them before, but they're pretty fantastic. We have a wonderful artist, Abby Bull out of San Francisco, who does it for us. And they're great.
So did you find her after COVID? Was that part of your change?
She's a friend. So she's a friend, and she came to us and said, I'd love if you guys would let me just to design a can. We had her design a can, and then we were like, okay, you're in. So it's been a great relationship with her as well.
Jordan, what were a couple standout cans that you want to tell us about between the art or the beer or the sales?
So, I guess, taste wise or just the label art itself?
For you, what jumps out for you? What were standout cans?
So I think our standout tasting beer so far is between our Rooftop Rager, which was Will's first beer. It's a 7.7 IPA, a little heavy hitter. And it was fantastic. It was something that we hadn't had really here in a year. And then he just came out with a new one. Which is from this series that we're doing. It's called the Traveling Band Series, and it's the fall series, and it's an IPA that is amazing. And in addition to that, the label art for it is awesome. And what's cool about it is with the series, it's going to be the we're in the fall right now, and then we're going to have a winter, spring, and a summer. And it's going to basically be this same Traveling Band logo and just kind of switch it up with the season.
Well, that fits, and so that builds your brand for – next year when Brooklyn Steel reopens too, right?
Right.
That's great. Another thing for you, growing the can sales. So tell us more about this TapRM.
I think they're new kids on the block. They kind of, came around 2 years ago. I own two other bars. So we knew about them from just on the other side of it. Just they would come to us trying to sell their beer and their portfolio. And so when I found out about the online sales that they were doing, and they were clearly moving beer all across New York State, we felt it was the best option. Obviously, the beer sales are nice, but really more for us, it was to get our name out. And I trusted in our label art. And they, from what I know, they have done quite well. And then, again, we talked, and when we brought Will on, we signed with them for the wholesale distribution. I can't talk well enough about them.
So they do. They pick up from you, and just tell me the whole process, because it's always tricky. You probably didn't expect to be wholesaling, did you?
No, that was definitely not the plan when we opened. So we've had to, and I've never been part of a brewery before. I've never owned part of a brewery before. So, to kind of grow into this and make the decisions along, especially with the challenging times of COVID, has been, you second guess yourself, but you think you make the right decisions. And I think we have so far. So to answer your question, with Taproom, being able to what they've been able to provide us internally is I can see where our beer has been sold over the last 6 months, and so I can see that our beer has been sold in Lake George, for argument's sake. And you know, for me, next time I know next summer, you know, maybe we go up there with a couple of guys and we just spend some money up there and buy some beer and it really helps us on the wholesale front.
Yeah. And then may I ask, what are the bars that you own?
I own Northern Bell in Williamsburg, and I own Jimbo Slim's, which is on the Williamsburg Greenpoint border.
Great. And what made you want to open a brew pub? Because obviously, how long have you been in the business now?
We've owned bars for 8 years. My partner's owned bars, actually going up about another 6 years past that. And, we've always been in the business. And then just at some point years ago, we said, let's open a bar. And then we wanted to torture ourselves and said, let's open another bar. And then we really wanted to torture ourselves again and said, let's open a brewery. So that's pretty much how it went.
So then you did it right. When you had to switch over, you brought in Will. So, guys, we're off to a great start. We're just going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
All of us at HRN have been keeping busy, despite working and recording from home. This fall, we're proud to announce new shows on the network that each bring important and enlightening stories to listeners around the world. While the world is in turmoil and the future of our country is uncertain, there are certain constants that help keep us going. For us, food and storytelling are essential. While we can't come together in person, food podcasts from HRN provide a virtual table we can all gather around. Bringing exceptional stories to your ears and keeping you informed on the ever-changing political and environmental issues of our time is integral to our mission. At a time when the world around us is rapidly changing, HRN is committed to being here for our listening community, and we need you to be here for us. Join our table and help ensure the future of food radio by becoming a member of HRN. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to make a contribution. Check out the latest additions to our lineup while you're there. You can see all of our series at heritageradionetwork.org/new show.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Please support us and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org. So we're talking, it's fall, it's October 2020. We're talking with 18th Ward Brewing and Bridge and Tunnel Brewing. So, of course, things have changed a lot. A year ago, 18th Ward was opening. Breweries wanted to have on-premise and full house of people. And everyone's been pivoting to can sales and a lot of other business models. So for you, Rich, I want to go way back with you because that garage, some of the garage beers you made were some of my favorite. And I know it took you for several years to really find the right location to open. But when you opened, what year did you open your Ridgewood brewery and tasting room?
Yeah, well, we opened the tap room and we opened the brewery 2015. November of 2015 is when we actually opened the doors to the public. I was brewing in there a few months prior to that, so the tap room wasn't ready yet. And that's pretty much it. But prior to that, I was building for about a year. So we've been, we do every November we do an anniversary party. Which obviously this year we're not doing it. But we do like a pig roast. And so this would have been,
5 years.
20, yeah. 20, yeah, 5 years it would have been.
Yeah, I remember I was there right before you opened. But for me, the beers that stood out were some of the, like the hazelnut eyes. It seemed like you had more dark beers and you started making some IPAs.
Yeah.
What's changed now? So what are beers that you're making during the pandemic that are selling in cans?
I'm still following seasonal trends, I guess. I mean, I could do stouts all year round, and I do, you know, like I always keep, you know, we had two stouts that we ran through the summer. You know, I do, you know, the beginning of the summer, I did a raspberry sour. We had the can label was, a buddy of mine did he has a tattoo shop down in, Williamsburg, and he was actually, he did a bunch of, album artwork back when he was, you know, 18, 19 years old for bands that, you know, a few of them are like kind of famous in their, you know, in their circles. So he offered to do a portrait of my dog, cause he was doing like pet portraits during COVID because his tattoo shop was closed. So he offered to do a portrait of my dog just because we're friends and we're neighbors. And, long story short, we ended up putting our dog on the label of the can. So that was like, that was our fun beer for the summer. It was called Riley Royale. Kind of like a little, it was like a Pulp Fiction, little reference, you know, a Royale with cheese. You know, so we called it Riley Royale. And then, you know, I've been doing, we've been kind of grooving with some of the New England IPAs. We have our, you know, bagel IPA. We've been messing around with a coconut IPA. We did a Belgian wit that we named, No Mask, Forget About It. Which was kind of, you know, fun and timely. And now we're, you know, now we're heading into the fall. So we just did some canning for our stouts again. I might actually do the hazelnut brown ale again, possibly this week. We just did some cider, you know. We're sticking to what we always do. You know, we always throw a wide net and we try to give people that option. You know, like,
well, yeah, and you're the ultimate, you know, if I was out in Ridgewood, I'd be at your place every week. Just throw a wrench in this. So when did you want to either swear or pull your hair out or get really upset? Was it March? Was it April? Was it May? Did you ever lose it after the pandemic started?
You know, it's funny. When things start to transition to another stage is when I feel stressed out, you know? So initially when we first, you know, the first week of like the shutdown, a tap room was closed and then having to come up with a plan, that first week was pretty hard, you know? And then the canning got down, you know, you started moving on to, you know, with the cans, and then, and then there was a feeling of relief because it was working. And then when everybody came back outside and everything opened up again, you know, then the delivery started dropping off. And then it was like, okay, here we go again. You know, what's the next wave? And then we put tables outside, you know, and that was working out. But, you know, then in the summertime, people start going away. So we were getting a little bit of a lull on that, you know, during that time. So then, once again, the stress comes back. And now, honestly, I'm in it right now, you know, because, okay, the cans are doing, you know, people are coming in, they're buying four packs, bringing them home. It's very helpful, you know. Our outdoor seating is doing fine, but I have a landlord that I'm always trying to keep on the good side with, and I didn't want to go, you know, hog wild and build, you know, outdoor seating on the street, you know, like on the curb. So we just limited our outdoor seating to the sidewalk, partly because it's a bus lane. It didn't stop my neighbor up the street from doing it, but I just didn't want to do it. And so, you know, weather is changing. You know, now I'm starting to get emails from people saying that they want to help us with heating lamps and, you know, propane tanks. There's no way I'm going to do that, you know, just because I'm trying to be low impact with my landlord. So once the cold hits, we're going back inside. And I don't know, you know, like this could be a hard winter. I don't know where things are going to be, you know?
So. Yeah, that's true. That's true for everyone, Richie. And Jordan, for you guys, the transition, you know, opening outside, it sounds like that was easy for you guys because you're more hospitality.
Yeah. You know, obviously with the, you know, to Rich's point, with the winter times can be tough. You know, at this point we can fit 18 people in here at a given time. So we'll see how that plays out over the winter. We were lucky that we had the outdoor space that we had. And, you know, again, I don't know how the next couple of months are going to fare for not just us, you know, everybody here.
Do you think that do people want to come inside? I mean, I do. You know, I've been out of the city in places where there's 50% capacity, and, you know, I'm very happy being inside as well.
Do I think people are going to want to come inside? That's a tough question. I think the answer is yes. I think people are fiending to feel a little bit normal, but I do feel that there's a huge faction of people that will not go inside, like my wife. She will not go inside a bar. Even though I own three of them, she will not go inside and hang out.
Same.
And Will's wife is the same.
Yeah. And then, okay, and let's back to beer now. So, Will, just getting to know you. So 2 months on the job. Wow. Was this a challenge that you were up for? I mean, are you excited every day coming in and making beer?
Yeah, of course. I think being here has kind of brought me back to my roots a little bit, where I'm actually, you know, very much intimately involved in the day-to-day brewing, as opposed to kind of running what at a certain point feels like factory work. You know, it is pretty exciting to piece together the utter chaos that is the operations of a 8,000 barrel plus brewery. But yeah, over here it's great. I mean, I come in, I get to brew whatever crazy thing comes into my head, and you know, within reason, obviously, got to make sure it sells. But
we let you do it.
Yeah, you got it. But Will, I know that you know, Ann Riley at New York City Brewers Guild, she told me about so many of the great different fall releases that New York City Brewers were putting out. What's a favorite for you for fall that's still out there, so that I can tell listeners now that they can get from 18th Ward the next couple weeks?
So I would say, honestly, our fall tour seasonal IPA is pretty – I mean, it's very, very appropriate for this time. It's like – it is – of course, a hazy IPA, but it's got tons of tangerine and citrus oil flavors to it, while the color looks incredible, like autumn leaves, to give you some imagery there. And it's got plenty of really pleasant pepper and spice to it at the end. So it's super appropriate, I think, for the season. Other than that, we did just release a Pilsner, an Italian Pilsner, which has become one of my favorite beers to drink.
So like a Tebow Pils kind of thing.
Yeah. Essentially inspired by Tebow Pils. Dry hopped, of course, with only European hops. But super super clean, super crisp, floral, like a little bit mild berry flavors from the noble hops. It's kind of interesting when you use a lot of those noble hops, you end up getting a little bit more of the berry, the perceived berry fruit beyond the floral notes. I mean, I think those two are probably the way to go.
It sounds good, man. And one more thing, as a brewer, I don't know if Jordan would say yes or no to this. Working at where you are now at 18th Ward, what's one piece of equipment, can be big or small, that you wish you had, assuming you also had the room for it at 18th Ward?
Oh, man. Yeah, I would say probably like a bigger system.
Yeah, we're only a three barrel system here, which is which was Will doesn't know this yet, but it was very challenging when the shows were going on. You know, September, October, November for, you know, a Brooklyn Steel season, you've got 26 nights of shows. We, at some point, I think we didn't understand this. At some point, mid-October last year, we only had three of our own styles of beer. So, you know, Will's going to have his challenges when Brooklyn Steel opens back up with the system.
So actually, that is a good point. I do know what I would love. Keg washer.
Ah, yes. We don't have the room. I would buy it for him. We don't have the room.
But yeah, that's one thing that I, when I came in, I was like, kind of like a little bit backwards learning, where I was like, oh, wow, I've never done this without a machine to do it for me.
Well, it's like old school, you know, like Chris Kuzme at Fifth Hammer. I remember when he was at 508 Gastrobrewery in Soho, and he was really doing everything by hand as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's only up. You can say that. It's only going to go up. And then let's go back to a bigger question. Let's give this one to Jordan first, and then Richie will finish it off. The big question for you guys, now you're all brewers and breweries in New York City, which we're very proud of. Since 2014, the number of breweries has gone from really a handful to over 40. Jordan, what is the spirit of New York City craft beer?
What's the spirit as a whole?
Yeah, for you. And for you guys, what way you see it or way you want it to be?
Well, here's how I can look at it. For us personally, we would not, you know, as COVID has been terrible, it prompted us to do other things that we were not planning on doing, like bringing, you know, we've got Will and we're canning and things like that. So it actually pushed along some fun things for us to do. So personally, we're excited about where we're at and where we're moving, even though we don't have Brooklyn Steel. I think that the cool part about New York City brewing, and you mentioned Ann earlier, is that, you know, we continuously talk all the breweries together. We continuously help each other out. Everybody's very supportive via email or phone call. I can call any brewery right now and ask for anything.
Yeah, yeah. There's a great sense of community here, and it's kind of quite unique, especially living in the most ridiculous city in the country, probably the world. It's like, you know, one of the first things that I did once COVID hit, when I was still over at the Bronx, is we realized that kind of all of these breweries in New York City were going to be hit with all this out of code beer, and I ended up partnering with Ann and Roxanne over at Kings County Distilling, and we started sending her out of code beer to turn into hand sanitizer. And it's just this kind of this perfect storm of community that, you know, we always look out for each other.
Yeah.
You know?
It's been, again, I've only, you know, Will's been doing this for a while, you know, here in New York, but, you know, we only became part of this you know, within the last year, and I can't believe how supportive people are and how everybody's willing to help each other out. So to answer your question, I think we're going to survive. I think everybody's going to continue to band together and do well here. You know, and if that's getting creative with how our guild, you know, builds other revenue streams, and that's they'll do it. We have a smart group that's running the show there.
Well, and Will, just one more, just tell us again about the hand sanitizer project, because those things must have happened really fast.
Yeah, so when I was, I guess this was mid-March, so I actually, a little bit of backstory, I love telling people this. My wife and I got married March 13th, which was the day, basically the evening New York City got their stay-at-home order. So we were like the last day. And then we celebrated both of our birthdays, March 14th, at home. And then we had to kind of figure out what was going to happen. But the next few weeks at work were kind of up in the air. Like no one knew what was happening. No one knew what was going to happen. There was literally no one had any idea how to plan for this. But after a few days of weirdly working from home, which never happens in beer, I was just thinking of, you know, dealing with Union as a distributor, and like all of these breweries in the city are going to be sitting on kegs of beer that they do not know what to do with, and especially from the distro end, the distributor doesn't want that beer at some point. So I think I ended up reaching out to Anne, because it was just kind of like I noticed that other cities were doing this. I reached out to Anne. Anne told me that Roxanne had already started making hand sanitizer down at Kings County. And I got in touch with Roxanne. I was just like, hey, do you think this is a possibility? I know, you know, 8 barrels of beer isn't going to make a ton of hand sanitizer, but it's better than it being dumped. And it worked. I think within, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of the shutdown, we had beer being sent down. I think the Bronx sent down maybe 24 kegs or something. And they were able to pump out tons of sanitizer. We were dropping them off locally in the Bronx. Roxanne and Kings County Distillery were dropping them off all across the Bronx, Manhattan, giving it to first responders, basically doing whatever we could as a city to make sure that the people helping people were safe themselves.
Well, that's a great story, man. And let's go back to Rich. Rich, for you, I think this question is really for you. What's the spirit of New York City craft beer? Because to me, you've been that spirit for a long time.
Thanks, Jimmy. I'm going to say resilience. I mean, we have challenges that a lot of other breweries don't have, even, you know, just 40 miles north, you know. And I think the challenges just keep coming since we're, you know, in the city, with the challenges of COVID. So I feel like the demands to be resilient are on our shoulders probably more than any place else in the state. So I think if we're going to walk out of this with any sense of accomplishment, it's going to be the acknowledgement that we persevered through it harder than anybody else.
That's great. And then Rich, what can do you have out there in the next couple of weeks that I should be drinking?
We have a few things coming. We have a Hefeweizen that we're going to be naming. I need to speak to your manager. It's right around the corner. We just recently canned a whole bunch of our coconut IPA. That's Fuck the Virus, that people just can't stop taking pictures of online.
Yeah. I have a can of that in my fridge.
And what's your Oktoberfest?
The Oktoberfest was, I can't believe it's, no, I'm sorry. I can't wait till it's Overfest. Then the can had a whole bunch of, politicians of interest that were all like clustered together on the can itself. And then at one point I was putting the can art together, and I was just like grabbing images that I could find. And, one of my bartenders goes, you have to put a picture of Putin. So I was like, all right. You know, like I took a picture of what I was doing. I texted it to him. He goes, you got to include Putin in there. So as I was working on that, it was a Sunday, and you know, Sunday's usually family day for me and the wife and kids. And I heard my wife going, oh, I don't think we could drive out to Long Island today. I mean, they've been seeing sharks all over the place. So I was like, all right, that's 2020 as well. So I went and I tracked down a picture of a shark. And so Putin, right next to Putin, is a shark. So they were the two ending images that finished that can art.
Yeah. Well, that's great, man. You guys really made my day, and thanks for sharing all these thoughts and resilient stories. Jordan, you want to wrap it up? Anything that we should be thinking about going into the next couple months?
I guess on our end, just for anybody else that's listening to this, just be safe and be happy, and let's get through the winter time, and let's continue to drink beer and drink local.
Support your local brewery.
All right. And Will, it's a real pleasure meeting you and hearing about some of your stories. And I look forward to talking to all you guys further.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Jordan, Will, and Rich for joining me on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host of Beer Sessions Radio. Thanks to our producer, Dylan Hoyer, and engineer, Amanda Wang. I will catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
All right.
Woo.
All right.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.